Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Today we turn to overeating as part of our addiction series on Open House. You may find yourself in a drive-through occasionally, not hungry, but somehow sensing you might feel better after you buy something. It's been a long, stressful day, and you feel a bag of corn chips or a pack of Tim Tams may not be enough to get you through. You're not alone. There are some powerful forces you may not recognize driving you to overeat. It could be salt or sugar addictions, or something much more personal and emotional. While we can reset our body chemistry with changes to diet, addressing the emotional drivers is the focus of Overeaters Anonymous. To respect the anonymity of our next guest, a core Overeaters Anonymous tenant, we'll call her Sarah. Sarah, welcome to Open House. Where did your food addiction kick off?
It started when I was about 14, and I really struggled to deal with a lot of the emotions around what was happening for me as a teenager, and I just found that food was a very effective way of calming me down and taking the edge off things. When I was a bit older, I started experimenting with drugs and things like that, but I found that actually food was a much more effective way of dealing with some of the difficulties of life, and it just really took off from there. If I was, you know, going on a really intense sort of binging on sugar, I'd certainly get a high from that, and then I'd be anaesthetised by it. But, you know, it really depended. I think more than anything, I just found food as being a solution to everything, and, you know, I'd eat anything and everything, really.
Were there some foods that were particularly attractive relative to some stressors, or was it anything you could get your hands on?
No, they're definitely preferences that I had. I think for a lot of people, you know, it's a really sweet, sometimes high-fat foods. They seem to have they give you that high, plus they also then have a sedative effect. But I think, you know, people can be, well, I know for me I could get desperate and eat anything, you know. And sometimes it would start off eating really healthy foods like muesli bars, and then it would take me straight to the Tim Tams. You know, it was just, all I know is that it gave me some kind of effect that just took away the edge of just living life on life's terms.
And the other side of you overeating, was there a down? Was there a self-recrimination? Did you punish yourself afterwards?
Well, I think for me it made me profoundly depressed and suicidal. It took me to some very dark places because I felt so hopeless and so ashamed, and I felt like it wasn't something I could talk to anybody about.
So you ate covertly?
Yes, yeah. And it would take me a long time to get home from work or uni, or, you know, it would take me hours. I'd just be going from shop to shop, you know, just buying more food and pretending it was for other people. And, you know, a very, very painful part of my life.
And how long was this span of your life for, Sarah?
Started at 14, and then I came into Overeaters Anonymous at 28.
Goodness.
So I spent 14 years living my life in a way that was extremely painful, and I mean, it's a miracle I survived, really.
How did this impact your relationship with family and friends?
Not well.
Yeah.
Because of the secretive nature of it. And in terms of relationships, you know, I ended up being in some very violent relationships with people and, marriages. And I think the food was a way of me dealing with the pain around that, but it also stopped me from being able to take care of myself.
When was that moment where you made that contact with Overeaters Anonymous, and what led to that?
Well, I was actually in New Zealand when I found Overeaters Anonymous, and I just saw it advertised on a community notice board, and I didn't really hold much hope that it would offer anything. But I went to a meeting, and it was profoundly moving for me because people were talking about what I'd done with food, and the fact that they were talking openly about it was a huge relief for me. And the fact that they weren't doing it anymore gave me some hope. I think that's the reason. Like, I've been in, you know, Overeaters Anonymous now since 1989, which is a very long time.
It is, yeah.
And I didn't plan on staying that long, that's for sure. But it has really given me a way to live my life. You know, it's like it's all about the food and nothing about the food. And I think the great thing about the program of Overeaters Anonymous is it really offers a spiritual path through life. It's not religious. You don't have to believe in God or anything like that. But it just gives me a roadmap to living my life that allows me to be, I suppose, the person that I'm really meant to be and not someone who's completely swamped by food and weight issues.
Sarah, I note with interest that it's a 12-step program. Is it, in essence, the same 12 steps of other anonymous groups like Alcoholics Anonymous?
Exactly the same as Alcoholics Anonymous. The only thing that's different is just the word food for alcohol. And people say, well, you know, with alcohol you can stop. And what about food? But, you know, people who are alcoholics still drink. They just don't drink alcohol. And for us, well, for me, as a compulsive overeater, I mean, I still eat, but I just avoid the foods that are my alcoholic foods, I suppose.
Yeah.
And those behaviours around them.
And like Alcoholics Anonymous, do you consider yourself a recovering overeater, or have you gained comprehensive triumph over this addiction?
Look, if I keep doing the things that work every day, then I'm living a recovered life. You know, I don't expect to go back to the food, but at the same time, it's very much based on me continuing to do the things that work. You know, so in the same way that a diabetic does what a diabetic needs to do,
yeah.
You know, I need to do things each day to keep me well. But, you know, they're not onerous, and I've been given a life that I just never thought was possible, and I'm a size 10. I can wear clothes that I've always wanted to wear. So, and that's been the case for many, many years.
How do you see food now, Sarah?
Something to be enjoyed, something to share with other people. I mean, I've got a family myself now. To me, it's about being with people. But, you know, food is in its proper perspective. In the past, that certainly wasn't the case. I was totally obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And now I feel quite safe and protected around and food. And, it's just good to be part of the world and just living my life in a normal way.
How do we know that we have an addiction to something like food like you did?
Look, I think if you think you have one, you probably do.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, most people don't lie awake thinking that they've got a problem with food unless they do.
Yeah.
I think the two things for me was that it was the physical craving that came from eating certain foods. There were some foods that once I started eating them, I just couldn't stop. But the other thing too was just the mental obsession that, you know, even if I hadn't picked up foods that caused cravings, there was still a part of me that thought food was the solution to whatever might be going on. Or I might not even have a problem. I would turn to the food.
Addictions, by their nature, can be so crippling, so diminishing to our views of ourselves. How do you see yourself today, Sarah?
I'm just very grateful. I can't say that I was impressed with the name Overeaters Anonymous and I wasn't jumping at being a member.
Yeah, it's a fairly alienating term, isn't it?
It's not a great brand name.
No.
But it has given me a life that I wouldn't have had ordinarily, and it's made, I guess it's given me freedom. It isn't about winning the battle with food and weight. It's just given me freedom around it. I'm not struggling. And I think it's allowed me to contribute in ways that I never thought was possible. Yeah.
Are the reasons that people come to your meetings now different from the reasons that you started, or are we looking at a sad uniformity in the way that people find themselves addicted to food in your case?
No, I think there's a lot of variety. Some people come in very overweight, some people come in underweight, and some people just come in anywhere in between. It's less about the weight and much more about the craziness in our heads around the food and weight. So, you know, for people that have got anorexia or bulimia or, you know, any kind of issues around food or weight, Overeaters Anonymous definitely has a solution.
Sarah, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you'll find a link to Overeaters Anonymous on our webpage, openhousecommunity.com.au. Okay, time for a personally challenging conversation, if I'm completely honest. Each day, Australians consume on average more than 20 teaspoons of sugar, says the Australian Diabetes Council. It's making us fat, it's rotting our teeth, and contributing to type 2 diabetes. And you might be saying, well, I don't eat that much sugar. I have no real issue. Sarah Wilson is an Aussie author and blogger who, for her work, gave up sugar. And here's the horrifying aspect of this story. Listen to Sarah's daily diet. A couple of pieces of fruit per day, a handful of dried fruit as an office snack, a teaspoon of honey in her tea, and a small bar of dark chocolate or yogurt for dessert at the end of the day. That totaled up to be 25 teaspoons of sugar, about three times the recommended daily use. Sarah, welcome to Open House. The mortifying part of that diet is that for most of us, that looked pretty healthy. You weren't into burgers, thick shakes, chips, any of it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. That's what really surprises people, is that, you know, the healthy foods are sometimes where sugar is hidden. You know, a lot of people say to me, you know, I don't have sugar in my coffee or my tea, and, you know, I don't eat chocolate or whatever it is. Well, in some ways, that one teaspoon of sugar in your coffee or your tea is really not the problem, because that's obvious sugar. When you compare it with, say, a glass of apple juice or orange juice, is about 9 teaspoons of sugar, the same as a glass of Coca-Cola. You know, when you think about low-fat yogurt, you know, plain low-fat yogurt can contain 6 teaspoons of sugar. That's just in one serve, you know, a small punnet. You know, bolognese sauce, you know, that comes from a jar, you know, that you pour on pasta, savoury, that can be 5 to 6 teaspoons of sugar. So, you know, it really is the stuff that sometimes we consider to be healthy, or at the very least, you know, innocuous. That's where a lot of the hidden sugar is. Once you are empowered and you know how to make these simple choices, I mean, giving up a jar of bolognese sauce or giving up low-fat yogurt, it's not that big a deal, is it?
No.
I mean, it becomes a far simpler process, especially when you start to realise that it's not full-fat yogurt that's making you fat. It's actually the low-fat yogurt that's making you fat. And this is such a hard thing for us all to get our heads around, because for the last 60 years, we've been told the opposite. But the science is wrong, and it's been proven to be categorically wrong. It's just that all our nutritional guidelines and our eating habits have not caught up yet. You know, unlike heroin and cocaine, when you know you're having it, you know there's no mistaking it, you know you're doing it.
Yeah.
With sugar, we don't realise that we're addicted because we don't realise we're taking it.
Okay, enough of the shock and awe blitzkrieg. Mm. Let's get down to business. When you say, I quit sugar, that didn't actually mean you quit sweet stuff, did it?
Well, no, it didn't. I mean, I've got to point out, though, that for 6 weeks of the 8-week program that I developed, we actually take out all sweetener. So it includes whole fruit for that period, as well as the artificial, when I say artificial, sorry, the alternative sweeteners. I obviously don't use any artificial sweeteners.
Yeah.
But the alternative sweeteners, I pull those out as well, because it's all about recalibrating our taste buds and our appetite. You know, really breaking the addiction, and then introducing some whole fruit and some other safe sweeteners back into the diet. So, you know, the foods that I use now for sweetening my cakes and biscuits and so on is coconut oil, coconut products, nuts, sweet potato, along with rice malt syrup, which is very much like honey, but it doesn't contain any of the harmful fructose. You don't miss out. You're not deprived. It's just about making smarter choices.
When you quit sugar, though, you went cold turkey. And is it true that you gave it away because you needed something to fill a newspaper column?
I know. It's a two-pronged thing for me. I wrote a column for a newspaper insert magazine, and where I tried something new every week. You know, that made my life better. So I wrote about all kinds of things. And I was short of a topic, and At the same time, I also had an autoimmune disease, a disease of the thyroid, which I'm sure many of your listeners would be familiar with, Hashimoto's it's called. And I had been told by a number of doctors and endocrinologists that I needed to avoid sugar. And I really didn't like the idea because I was so addicted, and in the most seductive way because I was eating so-called healthy sugars. So I was really not open to the idea at all. I'd put it off for over 2 years. I'd been told for that long that I needed to give it up. But I guess the impending deadline and, I was short of a topic, it all came together quite nicely, and there's nothing like a deadline, as a journalist, to make you do something. I thought I'd try it for 2 weeks, and I did. I just did it as a gentle experiment. I don't have to commit to this. We're just going to see how it goes. So, because I'm curious, Well, I felt better within 2 weeks, and that's what helped me. I wasn't doing it to lose weight, although I did have weight to lose because I'd put on weight as a result of my autoimmune disease. But, I did it just to sort of see what would happen. And I've got to say, many of my symptoms dropped away straight away, and then, of my autoimmune disease. But the first thing that changed was my skin. My skin changed visibly. And I've got to say, this little moment in vanity really helped. And a lot of the people who've done my program now, about 300,000 people have done my program now, a lot of people report that their skin is the first thing that's shifted, and it was enough to keep them going and going and going. And that's exactly what happened with me. I committed to 2 weeks, and then I just kept going and going. I didn't see any point in going back to sugar, not when I felt that good and I was getting the results. The weight then started to drop off, and I hadn't even thought of the weight. By the time it started to drop off, I was like, oh, extra bonus. And because it dropped off so, really gradually, it wasn't done in a dangerous way, and it was sustainable. And so my weight now has not changed in 3 years. It has been stable within no more than half a kilo, give or take, for 3 years. And, my appetite is completely stable. I can eat whatever I want. And the point is, I don't want to eat sugar because I know what it does to me. And when I do eat it on the rare occasion, every now and then I'll have a mouthful of a friend's birthday cake, or, there'll be a Thai meal that I can't avoid and it's full of sugar, and, I immediately feel quite unwell. But I, it just reminds me, to be honest, of how it's just not something I'm meant to be eating, nor do I want to eat it. Predominantly I can tell you what I eat now. Breakfast is a really tough one. A lot of people struggle with breakfast because it is so sugary, whatever way you look at it, I eat eggs. Eggs are fantastic. I eat bacon. I eat avocado. I make sure I eat plenty of protein and full fat in the morning. It's like throwing a log on the fire. Right. It'll burn nice and consistently, and then you've got nice steady energy until lunchtime, rather than needing to snack at 11 o'clock, on some chocolate or a muffin or banana bread. So, I eat a big solid breakfast, and I burn nice and solidly through to lunch. At lunch, I generally have vegetables and some sort of meat. It might be, chicken or tuna or whatever it is. Plenty of olive oil and butter, just like my grandmother used to do things, or the Mediterranean people do things. They all know that to absorb vitamins A, E, K, and D, which are the vitamins in a lot of our vegetables, you need to have some good quality fat with it. So that's why the French put butter on their vegetables, the Italians pour olive oil, and I do the same. I make sure I do exactly the same. And then I do the same for dinner. Dinner's generally, I eat it, out with friends at the pub or at a Greek restaurant. Indian food is fantastic because it doesn't contain sugar generally. It just is sweetened with things like coconut products, much like the way I cook. Very easy to navigate. I drink red wine most nights. I have a glass of red wine. It's the fructose that actually ferments to become alcohol. So it's very, very low in that kind of harmful sugar. But at the same time, there's studies that show that it can actually help balance out the blood sugar in the meal that you eat that evening. So I have a glass of red wine. If I am hungry after dinner, especially if I'm out with friends and they're ordering dessert, if I haven't inspired them to quit sugar, I have a cheese platter. I actually find that I've got far more food freedom today than I did before I quit sugar, because I eat what my appetite wants. I don't go low fat, I don't diet, I don't restrict. Basically, quitting sugar gets your appetite mechanism back recalibrated and working again.
Sarah Wilson, it's been a delight having a chat. Thanks for pumping us up and getting us off sugar, at least.
I hope I haven't scared you off.
No, not at all. I'd encourage people to check your website. It's a brilliant resource. We'll post a link on our internet site and our Facebook pages at the end of this show. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.